February 11, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 300, third reading failed. Mr. President, the bill listed below failed to pass the House third reading by the vote indicated. Senate file number 67, wiretap authorization. Ayes 30, noes 28, excused 2. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. February 11, 2013, from the House of Representatives. Message, third reading passed. Mr. President, the bills listed below pass the House on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 17, Community Juvenile Services. Ayes 56, noes 2, excused 2. Senate File 26, Authorization for Certain Radioactive Waste Facilities. Ayes 55, noes 3, excused 2. Senate File 82, Game Bird Farm Licenses Expiration. Ayes 58, excused 2. Senate File Number 98, Motor Vehicle Lemon Law. Ayes 56, noes 2, excused 2. Senate File 33, Search and Rescue Program Donations. Ayes 54, noes 4, excused 2. Senate File 38, University of Wyoming Board of Trustees. Ayes 39, noes 19, excused 2. And Senate File 39, Uniform Adult Guardianship Jurisdiction Act. Ayes 58, excused 2. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. Do we have to? She got up safeties. Okay.
What?
February the 11th, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 309, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 76, Bighorn Sheep Relocation. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 39, noes 6, noes 19, excused 2. February 11, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 310, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate file number 105, School Capital Construction. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 57, noes 1, excused 2. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. February 11, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 304, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 4, Livestock Disease Reporting and Liability. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 42, noes 16, excused 2. House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendment. February the 11th, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 297, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate file 27, Limited Mining Operations. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 57, noes 1, excused 2. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. February the 11th, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 298, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 30, Special Districts. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 47, noes 11, excused 2. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. February 11th, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 299, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate file 62, State Board of Education membership. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 46, noes 12, excused 2. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. February the 11th, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 308, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate file 68, sales tax zapping. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 56, noes 2, excused 2. House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendment. February the 11th, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 303, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate file 124, frivolous liens. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 56, noes 2, excused 2. House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Concurrences. Senator Geis, are you ready on message number 304, concurrence request in reference to Senate file 4?
Yes.
The reading clerk will read in the message.
February the 11th, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message 304, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate file 4, livestock disease reporting and liability. Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 42, noes 16, excused 2. The House respectfully asks Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments.
Senator Geis.
Mr. President, your message 304 of being Senate file 4, livestock disease reporting and liability, I would ask the Senate, I would move that the Senate vote aye on the House amendments, and what they did on line 1, page 1, line 17, after livestock, insert defined by Wyoming statute 1120-101A, little Roman numeral 4. On page 2, line 22, delete may and insert is. Then on page 2, line 23, delete A, insert J, delete coming into, insert acquiring ownership or assuming. And then we go down on page 2, line 1, in the gross copy, after bond aboard, insert through rules and regulations. We didn't tell how we were going to do it, and so they put in there that they will develop the rules and regulations on there. And I'd ask you to vote aye on message 304.
Discussion? The motion is that the Senate do concur on message number 304 in reference to Senate file 4, and you've been asked to vote aye. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson District 2?
Aye.
Anderson District 28?
Aye.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstader? Driscoll,
aye.
Emmerich,
aye.
Esquivel,
aye.
Geis,
aye.
Hastert,
aye.
Hicks,
aye.
Hines,
aye.
Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Nutting,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Bonfleitern,
aye.
President Ross.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 30 ayes.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate File 4. Senator Case, are you ready on message number 229 in reference to Senate File 62?
I don't believe I have that, Mr.
I read it wrong. Never mind.
I can do it if you want.
Senator Coe, are you ready on message number 299 in reference to Senate File 62?
Yes, I am, Mr. President.
Reading clerk will read the message.
February the 11th, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 299, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 62, State Board of Education membership. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 46, noes 12, excused 2. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments.
Senator Coe.
Mr. President, I move message number 299 to Senate File 62, State Board of Education membership, and ask the body to vote aye. Mr. President, what they did here, as you might recall, this bill had to do with the structure of the State Board of Education. It came in with the two at-large members and made one of those members be a school board member from around the state. What this amendment does is it comes in and says that appointments from each district shall be, hold on a second, Mr. President, I've got to put my glasses on. Appointment district shall be rotated among the several counties comprising that district. I actually thought this was a pretty good amendment. This is the way we do it with the YDOT Transportation Commission. This is the way we do it with Game and Fish Commission. And so I supported this amendment. I think it's a pretty good amendment. So I'd ask that you vote for this concurrence request and vote aye.
Discussion. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I rise to urge the Senate to vote no. The trouble is that what they did is they're rotating the appointments within the appointment districts. And this outfit's getting some pretty important responsibilities that where there is some difference in what they do makes a fair difference. And for instance, I've looking at appointment district number one, that's Laramie County, Platte County, and Goshen County. Mr. President, what you're saying is that each of those three should have the same representation. Laramie County is what? 9 times the size of each of those other two counties? That's discrimination against the larger county. Appointment district number 7. Converse, Natrona, and Fremont. There's a big population disparity. And what this is going to do is it's going to bias the membership of the State Board of Education in some ways that are different from where the population lies within the state. And with the duties that that outfit now has, Mr. President, I'm pretty concerned about that you're biasing things against the larger counties. We could go through the whole list of them, but it's a problem, the use of these appointment districts, because they worked, I guess, in the days when the counties were much more equal in population and when the duties weren't as sweeping as they are now. But I think now it's going to lead to problems. It's going to become difficult to find members sometimes from some of the smaller counties whose turn it is. You're narrowing scope that the governor has to draw from. And I would urge us to defeat the concurrence and think that if we can't get this straightened out, this bill could come back another day.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I guess I join in those concerns from our colleague from Casper. The idea was you would have districts, and within those districts you would look for the best, most highly qualified person. And if you begin to start rotation, then you find the situation where a large county won't have representation for maybe 16 years. I mean, if you look at whatever the, I go back, but these are fairly long appointments, and if you have to rotate it county to county, then you could be in a fairly large district that has the majority, or, you know, one-third of the students in the state, and not see a representative from your area for some time.
Senator Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman, great argument. Small county might not ever have a representative under this system. If you vote the other way, if you're not in a rotation and you're in a little county, you may never have a representative ever. This system's worked really well for a long time. It's been fair. It's done in a lot of our big areas, and it's worked really well. There's good people all the way across. They tend to treat people fairly up and down. And to discriminate against a little county where there is no population is the real crime.
Further discussion, Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, on and against concurrence, the amendment that the House put on really isn't germane to this bill. It's a very simple piece of legislation where a superintendent is added to the board. That's all it does. This amendment fundamentally changes how we select all of the members of the board, not just that superintendent, but every last one of them. So I'd encourage the body to oppose concurrence based on the fact that this amendment really isn't consistent with the original intent of the bill. Plus, I agree with all of the arguments that we just heard about how it wouldn't work very well.
Further discussion.
That's right.
Well, Senator Meyer.
Well, Mr. President, I resemble those marks about the little guys. Mr. President, there are a lot of, I guess, archaic methodologies that we have in our appointment districts. But I don't believe that this is neither the time or the place to discuss all those and to essentially say that the things that we have been doing for the last 150 years have caused a great deal of distress and a failure of our system to work. And, you know, if we're going to look at those, I think that's a good interim topic maybe for the Corporations Committee. They can look at appointment districts by Senate district lines or nested districts of several Senate districts. I think that's an appropriate thing to look at all of those. But, Mr. President, this is not going to cause the earth to quake or the skies to fall if we pass aye on this one.
Further discussion? Senator Coe.
Well, Mr. President, you know, we're talking about K-12 here, really. That's what it's all about. And I can tell you, whether you live in a large county or a small county, your schools are just as important, whether they're big or small. And, you know, it's worked well with the YDOT Commission. It's worked well with the Game and Fish Commission. Hasn't been any problems with that. We've had good people from all the counties. Up in my district, there's four counties up there. Park, Bighorn, Warski, and Hot Springs, and Park County has as many people as the other three put together. But we rotate around from county to county with Game and Fish and YDOT, and it's worked well. They have at their heart the highways. They have at their heart the wildlife. We're talking K-12 here. It's about our kids, and I submit to you that it's just as important, the kids are just as important in the schools, in the small counties, as the big ones. So I'd ask that you support the concurrence request.
The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 62. You've been asked to vote aye. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson District 2.
Aye.
Anderson District 28.
No.
Barnard. Bebout,
aye.
Burns,
aye.
Case,
no.
Christensen,
aye.
Coe,
aye.
Cooper,
aye.
Kraft,
no.
Dockstader,
aye.
Driscoll,
aye.
Amrick,
aye.
Esquibel,
no.
Geis,
aye.
Hastert,
no.
Hicks,
aye.
Hines,
aye.
Johnson,
no.
Landon,
no.
Meyer,
aye.
Nicholas, Nutting,
aye.
Perkins,
no.
Peterson,
aye.
Rothfuss,
no.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott?
No.
Bonflatern?
Aye.
President Ross?
No.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 18 ayes, 12 noes.
Senator Burns.
I'll announce it. I thought maybe you were going to change your vote.
By your vote, you have concurred on message number 299 in reference to Senate File 62. Senator Burns.
Privilege to the floor, please.
You may.
Mr. President, one of the real pleasures of serving on a committee as diverse as Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources is that one of the areas that you have a lot to do with and learn a lot about is tourism. It's the second largest industry in the state, and the people who are involved in it are the first people that people from outside the state get to meet. In many cases, they are the representation of Wyoming. And a lot of them are really a pleasure to know. And as we know, we've been invited to the governor's conference, the reception on tourism this evening. And a number of people involved in tourism are in the balconies today, and I wish they'd all stand up so we can welcome them to the Senate. To the Senate. Thank you.
Welcome to the Senate. It was a pleasure to have lunch with you today.
I didn't get invited for lunch.
Yeah, that's because you're only the chairman. Oh, gosh. All right, Senator Burns, are you ready on message number 309 in reference to Senate File 76?
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, Mr. President, I am.
The reading clerk will read in the message.
February the 11th, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 309, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 76, Bighorn Sheep Relocation. Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President.
Wait.
Ayes 39, noes 19, excused 2. House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, I move concurrence of message 309, Senate File 76, Bighorn Sheep Relocation, and ask the body to vote no. For further explanation of why I want that, I would ask that I would defer to the prime sponsor of the bill, Senator Hicks.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, by the amendments that the House put on here, they effectively reduced the flexibility to implement this act by 50%. With that, I would ask for your favorable consideration to vote no on concurrence.
Any discussion? Motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 76, and you've been asked to vote no. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, District 2?
No.
Anderson, District 28?
No.
Barnard?
No.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
Kraft?
No.
Dockstader?
No.
Driscoll?
No.
Emmerich?
No.
Esquibel?
No.
Geist?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
No.
Hines?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Landon?
No.
Meyer?
Nicholas?
No. Nutting?
No.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Rothfuss?
No.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
No.
Bonflatern?
No.
President Ross?
No.
Closing. Hastert, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 30 noes.
By your vote, you have failed to concur on Senate File 76. Joint conferees are Hicks, Chairman, Burns, and Driscoll. Ready? Senator Schiffer, are you ready on message 303 in reference to Senate File 124?
Yes, I am, Mr. President.
The reading clerk will please read in the message.
February the 11th, 2013, from the House of Representatives. Message number 303, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 124, frivolous liens. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 56, noes 2, excused 2. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, I move that we do concur. Message 303 for Senate File 124, frivolous liens. Mr. President, what the House did, they went in a couple places. It's over on page 4, line 19. For the date that this bill applies to liens, it sets the date certain for which liens are covered under the new legislation. And then they went in on section 4 on line 22 of the same page, and they changed both of those dates to March 15th, 2013. Mr. President, the reason is that our own, one of our senators who's also the sponsor of this bill, went over and visited with the House when they heard it in committee. And he convinced them that this was probably the most important bill that they will ever vote for in their entire career. And they got so excited about it that they wanted to make it effective immediately. But with liens, you got to have a date certain. So we know which liens are, this doesn't apply to and which liens do. But he was wise enough never to step in front of an excited House committee because people get hurt that way. So in their wisdom, they figured out exactly when this bill will be signed, which is on March 13th. So that's how come, or March 15th. So that's why they settled on that date. Mr. President, I think it makes perfect sense to me, given the circumstances and the bravery of our colleague from Natrona County to go face an excited House committee. I ask you to vote aye on this concurrence.
Discussion? Senator Scott.
Mr. President, it's my experience when outfits like that get real excited, you get them circling. And then they run over you.
Senator Schiffer.
There was some discussion that they actually did all circle with their horns pointing out and their babies in the middle so that the senators couldn't pick them off one by one.
Further discussion? Senator Meyer.
Well, Mr. Chairman, yeah, but wait. I'm just wondering if, you know, we've got a lot of things in here on page 2. We got, upon filing the affidavit, the lien claimant shall have 20 days, and then we got another one here of 15 days, earlier than 6, no later than 15. I wonder if the sponsors had time to track all those different day limitations in there to find out whether or not there's any problems with anything that might occur with this date. And folks, usually things the circumstances just aren't there to make things, you know, go effective immediately. So I'm just curious as to whether or not we absolutely have to do this, or we just do it like we normally do, so people have a chance to digest this before the 1st of July.
Further discussion? Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, yes, and we have checked to make sure that it's going to work. And it will work going to March 15th. What that does, that sets the date going forward that liens fall under this statute. All of them signed up through and including March 14th will fall under the old statute. And eventually we'll work, all liens will be under the new statute. So, yes, it does work. This is a good bill. It fills a need, and I think it behooves us. If the system will work under the new system, let's move it forward. It's good, and it'll be good on March 16th, which is the day after it goes into effect.
The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 124. You've been asked to vote aye. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen. Coe. Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon. Meyer,
no.
Nicholas,
aye.
Nutting, Nutting,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Von Flatern,
aye.
President Ross,
aye.
Closing vote, closing. Vote closed. 29 ayes, 1 no.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate File 124. Senator Hines, are you ready on message number 297, referencing Senate File 27?
Mr. President, I am ready, and I move that we do concur.
Just a moment. We need to have it read in.
Number 297. This is a
excuse me,
limited...
Senator Hines, excuse me for just a moment. It needs to be read in and then...
Oh, excuse me.
February the 11th, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 297, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 27, limited mining operations. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 57, noes 1, excused 2. House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments.
Senator Hines.
Mr. President, I ask that we do concur with the message 297, limited mining operations, and what they did, they added in on the page 2 where was talking about the road and the comments, and this they added that affected land shall not be within 300 feet of any existing occupied dwelling, home, public building, school, church, community, institutional building, park, or cemetery, unless the landowner consent has been obtained. The sponsor of the bill is agreeable to this, and so I ask you to concur.
Discussion. Question is then, and the motion is that we do concur on Senate File 27. You've been asked to vote aye. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
No.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks. Hines, Johnson, Landon, Meyer, Nicholas, Nutting, Perkins, Peterson, Rothfuss, Schiffer, Scott, Von Flatern, President Ross.
Aye.
Closing. Burns, aye to no. Nicholas, aye to no. Closing. Driscoll, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 23 ayes, 6 noes, 1 conflict.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate File 27. Signing of enrolled acts.
Signing of enrolled acts. Enrolled Act number 11, being original Senate file 17.
Senate Enrolled Act number 11, being original Senate file 17, an act relating to community juvenile services.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act number 11, being original Senate file 17. I have so signed. Enrolled Act number 12, being original Senate file 26. Reading clerk, read it.
Enrolled Act number, Senate Enrolled Act number 12, being original Senate file 26, an act relating to radioactive waste.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act number 12, being original Senate file 26. I have so signed. Enrolled Act number 13, being original Senate file 33. The reading clerk will read it.
Senate Enrolled Act number 13, being original Senate file 33, an act relating to search and rescue fees.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act number 13, being original Senate file 33. I have so signed. Enrolled Act number 14, being original Senate file 38. The reading clerk will read it.
Senate Enrolled Act number 14, being original Senate file 38, an act relating to education.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 14, being original Senate file 38. I have so signed. Enrolled Act number 15, being original Senate file 39. The reading clerk will read it.
Senate Enrolled Act number 15, being original Senate file 39. An act relating to guardianship and conservators.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act number 15, being original Senate file 39. I have so signed. Enrolled Act number 16, being original Senate file 82. The reading clerk will read it.
Senate Enrolled Act number 16, being original Senate file 82, an act relating to game bird farms.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act number 16, being original Senate file 82. I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act number 17, being original Senate file 98. The reading clerk will read it.
Senate Enrolled Act number 17, being original Senate file 98, an act relating to trade practices.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act number 17, being original Senate file 98. I have so signed. Reports from standing committees.
February the 11th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 102, engrossed hospitalization of mentally ill persons. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Senators Kraft, Nutting, Peterson, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman. February the 11th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number one, Judiciary. to whom was referred House Bill 36, Engrossed Property Offenses, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Schiffer. Senator Schiffer, Chairman. February 11, 2013, Mr. President, Committee Number 9, Mineral Business and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 212, Engrossed, Impact Assistance to Local Governments. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass, amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Senators Cole, Cooper, Hines, and Rothfa, Senator Hines, Chairman. February the 11th, 2013, Mr. President, Committee Number 9, Mineral Business and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 58, Engrossed, Community Infrastructure Program Amendments 2, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Senators Cole, Cooper, Hines, and Rothfa, Senator Hines, Chairman.
Majority Floor Leader. Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. May I have the privilege of the floor?
You may.
Members of the Senate, if you all got your goldenrod, I'll give you kind of an update of where we are on the budget. And if you have any questions, I'll be glad to try to answer them. And just for your information, we made the announcement at noon, but your Senate Appropriations Committee is going to get together today upon adjournment and review the House changes to the bill, and then we'll probably come back, Mr. President, tomorrow and present that to the Senate so we can appoint a conference committee and get moving on this. The idea, if the House will agree to the wonderful Senate changes and understand where we're coming from, that we can have this and have it out of here by Friday. Mr. President, real quick, and if you look at the overall scheme, I'm not going to get into the specifics. We'll do that tomorrow. But if you look at your goldenrod on page 1, down there where it says budget bill, broad transfers to the LSRA, that's the amount of money that's left on the table based on our revenue stream and now based on the budget bill as it stands with amendments in the House and the Senate. And if you look down there at that number, you'll see that the House has about $10.7 million left and the Senate has $12.5 million left, which means that the Senate was much more conservative to the tune of about $1.7 million. So the House spent more money than we did, and that's where we stand, Mr. President. If there are any questions, I'll be glad to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we're at that order of business, consideration of bills on general file.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate resolve itself back into Committee of the Whole.
You heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Cooper.
Committee of the Whole, come back to order. First bill for our consideration is House Bill 79. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill Number 79, Collection of Unpaid Wages, sponsored by Representative Stubson, an act relating to the collection of unpaid wages. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28. Senators Nutting, Peterson, and Scott. No, Senator Kraft. Senator Scott, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so the recommendation that House Bill 79 do pass. There was no standing amendment, committee amendment, and for an explanation of this good little House bill, I yield to Senator Landon.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 79 will be somewhat familiar to all of you. It's a case not unlike one that we dealt with a little bit earlier in the session, in which our Workforce Services Office, it's a case of making a strict interpretation of our statutes, and the effort in House Bill 79 is to simply clarify the intent of the legislature, so that's what we're up to. By way of background, fellow senators, employers in our state have great flexibility in choosing how they award vacation time. The number of days is at their discretion as to the decision to offer paid vacation or not. They can offer 0 days. They can offer up to 4 weeks of fully paid vacation. They can give a certain number per year. They can give the right to accrue vacation over time. A number of employers across our state have adopted a take-it-or-leave-it vacation policy. These policies allow our employees to bank time, but provide that if unused vacation time exists at the time that the employee leaves employment with the company, that they do not get paid for the unused time. These kinds of policies allow the employers to control what we call unfunded liability or contingent liability. And it protects them from a situation where an employee banks a significant amount of vacation time and then demands a lump sum payment at the time that they're leaving employment. The policy also rewards long-time employees because it allows them to accumulate significant paid vacation leave. So here's the problem. In recent years, a number of employees have filed unpaid wage claims in circumstances where the employer has had a take-it-or-leave-it policy. Even where the policy is clear that the employee is not entitled to payment for the unused vacation, our Department of Workforce Services has required employers to pay for unused vacation. This is particularly disturbing because these awards directly contradict the policy that's been agreed to by the employer and the employee. Employers have made it clear that they cannot control their liability by utilizing take-it-or-leave-it testimony. They will cut the number of days available to employees. As a result, the policy adopted by Workforce Services ultimately could end up harming both employers and employees. House Bill 79 requires employers to have a take-it-or-leave-it policy in writing, and then the bill simply requires the state to enforce agreements reached between employees and employers. Fellow senators, that's a quick and dirty overview. I'll take you to the bill, and you'll notice that the meat of the bill is under subparagraph 3I, which carries forth onto page 2, and that's where the new language is inserted into the paragraph, which states, but does not include the value of vacation leave accrued at the date of termination if the written policies of the employer provide that accrued vacation is forfeited upon termination of employment. That's the quick overview, Mr. Chairman. I would be glad to try to answer any questions. Thank you.
For the discussion on the bill. Mr. Minority, floor leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, and to the sponsors, I have a couple of questions. One is, it says written policies. Now, that doesn't imply necessarily a contract of any sort. Is a contract the implication of that, or is it just a written policy that's in place? The other question I would have is, what's the date, effectively, of this written policy? Can I change it retroactively? Could it be the written policy that's in place the day an employee is terminated or quits their job, or is the intent of the law to be the written policy that's in place at the time that the individual was hired, or would there be a chance for renegotiation? I think that's another major concern. So hopefully I can get those answers. Thank you.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'm having a little difficult time understanding this. That what we're saying is that as it is today, the employer has the benefit of the labor of the employee. Today the department is saying that you have to pay for the benefit of that labor. This says that you don't have to pay for the benefit of that labor if there's a written policy, but not necessarily requiring any notification of that written policy to the employer. Is that what I'm understanding here?
Senator Schiffer.
And Mr. Chairman, thank you. And I'm a little confused. As I understood the testimony, Workforce Services is paying for unused vacation, even if the company currently has a written policy against it? What are their grounds for paying this? I'm trying to figure out who's having a problem here, and I think I'm coming down to maybe Workforce Services has a problem, and our employers are doing fine.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, on that point, it does sound like a problem within the Workforce Services. I believe the testimony was a 1962 Attorney General's opinion that includes the vacation pay in wages. And the testimony we had in committee, actually from one of the providers that we usually see on some of the problems in our area, is that they couldn't afford the policy of paying off the unpaid vacation time. And they changed their policy, and on advice of legal counsel, I think it was, they paid off their existing employees that had accrued vacation time so that they weren't changing the rules in the middle of the game on anybody. And there was a case when an employee left, claimed all this accrued vacation time they'd been paid for once already, and Workforce Services awarded it to them all over again, relying on that 1962 Attorney General's opinion. So I think, frankly, the agency has got it wrong here, and this is something that we do need to change. Bill made a lot of sense when it was presented in committee. I would mention, Mr. Chairman, while I'm at it, I've had a number of emails from people who think it's aimed at state employees. And when you look very carefully at the definition, which is in a single I that's not reprinted in this bill, but part of the existing statute, it's quite clear you're talking about private employers, and it doesn't affect governmental employers, doesn't affect the state employees. That policy is what it is and isn't affected by this particular bill.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, this, and I think the senator from Tatrona County did hit on the point and did bring up the fact that there was 63 attorney generals. It's not just the Department of Workforce Services. They are interpreting the way the law is. Now, these are earned benefits. These are either deferred compensation or earned benefits that they're saying that you can't be negotiated out of. These are, you know, so like if you earn your vacation, you know, that's what it is that you've went there, you've worked there for so many years, and, you know, you've earned that vacation. There may be times when the employer hasn't allowed you to take the vacation for one reason or the other because they're really busy. You know, what I understand, and maybe the sponsor can certainly tell differently. From what I understand, we're legislating this on one lost case in 50 years. In over 50 years, we had one lost case that an employee won because the Attorney General and the I believe it was the 7th Judicial District Court said, that's right, these are benefits earned. And you can't say that you aren't owed these. So it's not just the Department of Workforce Services that did this. You know, and I think there's, you know, can be some unintended consequences of this. You're going to say that, you know, you've worked there for years, you've earned this vacation. I've got a concern over what the termination means. Does that mean you voluntarily terminate? Does that mean you're fired? Does that mean you retire? So upon retirement, you've worked there for 20 years, and you haven't been able to take your vacation for one reason or another. You know, and the law already limits the fact that and defines that employer can, because the law now stands, an employer can set a policy that limits employees' earnings or accrued vacation, and that limits the or prohibits carryover of that vacation. You know, they've already got that type of latitude. So you're saying that when a person retires, that on his anniversary date, he's awarded 4 weeks' vacation, and then it's gone. Then that's gone. That was a defined benefit And I know we're talking, you're going to say, you know, there's some issues that are coming up on what is you know, it was, you know, agreed to, but, you know, here the law says that, you know, you're entitled to it. So the Department of Workforce Services has been enforcing what the law has been for over 50 years. We have one case that's come up, and we're, sounds like we're changing legislation for that. And I'm, you know, just have a lot of concerns over this bill. You know, what if someone says, or the word, if we pass this and the word gets out and then, you know, people start, see, the guy has 2 months vacation, he's planning on retiring, but, or, you know, going to quit or something. He's going to say, well, you know, I'm going to just take my 2 months off. And then, you know, the employer's left there saying, gee, I wonder if this guy's ever coming back. So when he gets back, he just quits. So there's, you know, I think a multitude of unintended consequences. We've never taken a look at this, a thorough look at this. And, you know, I think it deserves some, a more of a look before we do something like this.
Senator Meyer.
If this bill goes on to second reading, though, I would like to have some discussion as far as whether or not there is notification in any other part of the statute, because otherwise an employer can just write the policy and keep the employee in the dark, and I don't necessarily think that's fair. And I would assume that upon appeal, if the case that we're talking about, if the employer already paid the benefits and it's documented by you know, a check number, and then I think the person would have a good case, and perhaps the department made the wrong decision. But that being said, if you don't have the documentation, you know, then you've got a problem. But I don't think you can operate in the blind. I really think we need to have some notification in this someplace.
Mr. Vice President. Mr. Vice President. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, Senator Anderson then.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. To answer a few of those questions before you get to this, we heard from the Public Employees Association of 1,300 businesses that have been in the last year.
It won't work.
650 were not approved. This is not about
just one case. 650 had been heard about accrued leave. So this is just trying to clean up the accrued leave. Now, the other thing that we heard from the workforce services is there's two different definitions if it's gifted or accrued vacation. Accrued vacation comes under a different time. If you say it's you use it or lose it, in 1 year it's a gift, and you can't accrue it over time. And many, many, many companies have rules and regulations about this. We also ask about the written document, and the written document does have to be signed by the employee and agreed by the employee. Question from Senator from Laramie, is that a current one or an old one? Of course it's a current one, whichever one is current, Mr. Chairman. So those are three questions that we had answered in our committee. Thank you.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just to get in some more discussion of it and trying to bring it back to what I think the bill is trying to do, if you're an employer and you hire a person and you have a policy on vacation and you say, in my company policy, this is what we do. If you should quit and I have a use it or lose it policy in place that you've agreed to in writing, and you agree to that in writing, and then you should quit, then you shall not get that vacation. And the way Workforce Services is implementing that now is they're saying, yes, you will. So that's what this is all about. We're trying to say if an employer has a written policy that the employee agrees to beforehand and everybody understands the deal, then later on, if they quit or terminated based on what your agreement is, and that agreement should be what you base everything on. Not that Workforce Services is going to come back and say, we disagree, we don't care about the agreement you had with your employee, we're going to make you pay that vacation leave. That's what this bill does. As to the issue with the public employees,
You know, I've had two opinions on that from two different lawyers. If I talk to two more, I probably have four opinions. What we're trying to do is we're asking the AG's office to give another opinion that says that this, in fact, does not include state employees. I read the statutes just like my tall colleague from Natrona County, that it does not include state employees. But I've also had people say it does. And Workforce Services has told me this morning that by inference, because they're not excluded, they're included. So we're going to try to get to the bottom of that as well. But that's what we're trying to do with this bill, is to allow the employer, employee, to have an agreement they agree upon that is what they operate under.
Mr. Minority, sorry, Senator Kraft. Sorry there. Gets coughs far over here inside. I have a hard time.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman.
I like that. Light up
I
your life
I
with that
I was hiding behind my flowers or something, but thank you very much. I just want to provide a little bit of background in terms of this bill, because I truly believe it's well-intentioned. I do. I think it's designed to clean some things up, but there are some issues here. And to just kind of address it, I'd like to go back to that 1963 case on which the Attorney General's opinion was based, which then required the employer to pay the employee the vacation wage. And that particular opinion from the AG's office said that vacation with pay is in effect additional wages or in the nature of deferred compensation, but there have to be three things met that I believe this bill is trying to address. One is an agreement or contract between employer and employee which provides for vacation pay. So if I'm the employer and I say I'm not paying you any vacation and you say cool and sign it, that I'm not paying you any vacation. If I say I've got a use it or lose it policy and you agree to it and you sign it, that's the way it is. So you have to have that. Then the agreement must specify some definite time element as to the period of employment, which must be completed by the employee before a right to vacation pay is earned. So if I say you don't get any vacation until you've worked for me for 6 months, and you say, cool, that's the way it is. Then, number three, third condition that has to be met, vacation pay must have been earned as provided in the agreement. So the conclusion of the AG's office, on which Department of Workforce Services based their action, is it is our view that vacation pay is, in effect, additional or deferred compensation. And the background for this particular case and this particular AG's opinion was a lawsuit where an employee had 3 weeks of vacation. He had 3 weeks coming to him. There wasn't a use it or lose it. He just had 3 weeks vacation that was agreed. He gave his two-week notice. He said, I'm leaving in 2 weeks. He took 2 weeks of vacation. He asked to be paid for the third. The employer refused. He filed a lawsuit, won that lawsuit. The employer then had to pay him for that one additional week, simply because there was nothing in the agreement that said you use it or you lose it. Nothing in the agreement that said if you quit, you don't get your vacation. That's what this was based on. That's what the AG's opinion was based on. So I'd like to just kind of underscore my Sweetwater County colleagues' comments that there's some unintended consequences here, and there's some definitions that I think we're going to have to look at very carefully before we move forward with this particular piece of legislation. Thank you.
Minority floor leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just to add on to that, I'm hearing language in debate that discusses the idea of a contractual agreement which implies signatures in place. But what I see in the legislation is simply written policies, undated written policies. And again, I go back to the fact that those written policies could change. There's no implication that there's a contract or an agreement in place, simply a written policy. If this passes and goes to second reading, I would certainly like to see that cleared up so that if we are talking about trying to have a policy here as a Senate where we have a written contract in place that is an agreement between two parties that we want to bind to, that we should at least have that in the language instead of something as simple as written policies, which obviously can change from time to time.
Senator Von Flader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to add to the what the good lady from Rock Springs was talking about, that Attorney General's opinion in 1963. And if you finish the conclusion of it, you read the rest at the bottom, it says, if an employee presents a claim for vacation pay to your office, which is based upon a contract or agreement, which makes provisions for vacation pay, and such pay has been earned according to the provisions of the contract or agreement, the claimant has a just claim which merits your attention. In other words, if you have a signed agreement, or in the case of this, a written policy that says you do not, you use it or lose it type deal, or you only get to accrue 2 weeks every year you can take forward, then that's what you get paid. It's very simple in this bill. This bill is a good bill. It just states that if you have a written policy, that's what governs the agreement when you terminate. Terminate means retired, fired, or quit. That's pretty simple. So he went through the whole Attorney General's 1963 opinion. They conclude that you need a if you have a contract or a policy in place, that's what governs. Good bill.
Further discussion on this. Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the good discussion that we've had. A couple of things. I agree with the senator from Laramie. There certainly could be some language that specifies, you know, signature being involved, and we would certainly want to clarify whether or not we're talking retirement or not and consider language on that front. But, you know, I agree with the vice president. This is really about a business's opportunity to control that unfunded, that contingent liability that we spoke of. And, you know, some of the unintended consequences could be in reverse. Because if we don't specify this and don't help businesses to be able to, through their human resource operation, to have these written policies in place that they can count on to be adhered to by our state agencies, then what's going to happen is businesses are going to shrink those days back, and they're not going to provide them to employees. And so I think this is a good bill. We can certainly talk about a language tweak or two to move it forward, but I think this is a good bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
It's you.
I don't know if this is a good bill. I'm not sure if it's a bad bill. But in my opinion, I think it's certainly an unnecessary bill. You know, my good senator from Natrona County mentioned about the employer's ability to control. And the reason we get into this kind of problems is because the employer has not controlled vacation benefits. The experience I've had with some of these situations is that the employer has these policies in place. Employee wants to take vacation. Employer says, I can't let you go. I need you, this kind of thing. And it carries over. Instead of the employer controlling the situation, saying you've got 2 weeks vacation coming up, when do you want to take it? And the employer can say either you can either take it in December, I'll give you the dates you can take it. And I think that's what happens. A lot of times the supervisors are too willing to let things slide and not control the situation, which is what they're responsible for. And they kind of grease each other's back, so to speak, instead of mandating that the employee take the vacation that he or she is entitled to. And employees, sometimes they feel guilty for not taking vacation. Sometimes an employer will put a burden on them, make them feel guilty for asking to take vacation. And, you know, employees need to take a vacation, and if they don't take it, well, the employer should mandate that they take it. Say either you schedule a vacation or I'll schedule it for you. And, you know, and I think that's basically all we have to do. So, thank you.
Senator Barnard. Senator Barnard, did you have a comment?
Mr. Chairman, I have some questions. What happens if a company changes hands? And when they change hands, the policy changes. Then what comes into play? And I agree, I'm seeing this as something really against the employees because they work, they accrue these values, and as the good senator from Cheyenne said, the employer said, well, you can't take this. Their a timepiece building up, building up, building up. And pretty soon, pretty soon when they terminate, they don't get those benefits. So if a company sells, which policy or which thing is enforced after that?
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I just I think the comment that came out that whether good, bad, or indifferent, or whether it's necessary, the employer today has the ability to gift it and not make an entitlement. What we're talking about is entitled. It's basically the earned, deferred, however you want to refer to it, but it's earned income. It's earned vacation. You know, we can talk about it it's a defined benefit. And that's what we're talking about here. The fact that the employer has the ability to say that this is, that you can only accrue so much, and the fact that the employer today can say it's a gift, and then, but that's what these bases, that's what the court case has been based on, that's the Attorney General based on, that's what Workforce Services has based on, and I don't think that is something that we should be changing, right now. So, like I said, the employer has that ability today to gift it, to make so it's not in the defined benefits column, and I'd ask you to resist the bill.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, that's exactly what is going on in small business and in employment law. Things are changing, and small businesses are doing what they can to control that liability out there. To answer the question from my friend from Evanston, I would expect Workforce Services to find in favor of the employee on that situation because there's a change of hands. And what this is trying to clarify, this bill, is that you've got something in place that the employee and the employer agree to up front. We talked about the fact that maybe we want to include a signature, and we can talk about that on a second reading, but the bottom line is this is a business agreeing with the employee upon signature, upon coming to work, that we don't pay vacation upon termination. And that's all the bill does. It helps clarify. Situations have changed. And now we have employment law. We've got businesses out there who are not providing that accrued vacation. Either use it or lose it. And that's very commonplace. But when we've got a state agency that's finding opposite of what that agreement is, then we've got to specify that in statute. And that's what this bill does. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, just a question for the sponsors, and I need to have you run through a scenario for me. So somebody's worked for an employer for 5 or 6 years and accrued maybe 2 or 3 months worth of vacation. And then they come back and say, now we're going to adopt a policy of use it or lose it. We also have a policy on our vacation that you can only take up to 2 weeks at a time. And then within a few weeks, that employee's terminated for whatever reason, retired, fired. What happens in a scenario where somebody's accrued a significant amount of vacation time and then a company adopts a policy, but they also have policy that says you can only use a small amount at any one time? What happens in a scenario like that?
Mr. Vice President.
Well, Mr. Chairman, you can come up with all kinds of scenarios, but to speak to that one specifically, if you have a policy or you don't have a policy, let's say you do have a policy that says that we're not going to use it or lose it, so they accrue 3 or 4 months vacation, then all of a sudden you, the employer, figure, well, I'll just terminate him and not give that to him, then I think you lose, and you should lose, because you made the commitment to that employee that you're going to have that 3 or 4 months, and that's the way it was set up. If you come in after the fact and say, well, I've got to change my policy to use it or lose it, then what he's got in place, you can't take that away. And I don't think you should be able to, and I don't think this law allows you to do that if we change it this way. And you should not do that. I mean, you made a deal. You ought to live by it, and I think the courts would support that.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, in the specific case that we heard about in committee, they had changed their policy, and they paid off the accrued leave for the employees that were there when the policy was changed so that they could do that. And I'm pretty sure they did that on advice of legal counsel. And then they went on for some time with a policy that you could not accrue vacation pay and get paid off for it. And some employee who left took them to the family services, took them to workforce services, rather, and was forced, the company was forced to pay the leave anyhow. And so this bill comes to you, I think, trying to give employers and employees in the workplace the right to make a deal and make it stick. And so I think it's something we really need to do, because I think, Mr. Chairman, there was an abuse by our state agency.
Further discussion. Minister, Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, to the point that was made by the good Vice President, the scenario that he laid out would actually go exactly the other way under this new legislation. If I have an employee that accrues 6 months of vacation and they haven't used that 6 months of vacation, and I have a written agreement in place that allows me to terminate them, even though they have paid vacation 6 months of it, I'm going to start looking at them as an expensive liability. I'm going to start thinking, wow, that individual has 6 months of paid vacation that I will have to pay for them to get nothing for me in return. So it's in my interest at that point as an employer to terminate that individual, because I get to sever that liability, that unfunded liability, without any compensation to me. That's what the potential impact of this is. I mean, that's a real scenario based on what we see here. And it's true, we could enter into contractual agreement, and I suppose it's fair as long as we both sign, but I certainly don't want to be entering into an agreement where it's in the interest of my employer to fire me if I accumulate a large amount of paid leave.
Vice President.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I treated my employees like that, I wouldn't have any employees. That's not what this is about. I mean, if you make a deal with an employee and you have that they can accrue vacation and you don't have it in place, if you don't use it, you lose it, then it's there and it's an obligation. You ought to pay it. What this is talking about as we move forward, and there again, and my tall colleague from Natrona County talked about a case like that, and the employer paid that, and they should. This does not affect that. If you have that agreement with them, then they should be able to, they'll honor that agreement. We're talking about moving forward. If you change that, what is in place has happened, it's there, it stays that way. If you move forward with a written policy and use it or lose it, then that's what we're trying to accomplish with this bill. We're not trying to go back and create a lot of smoke and mirrors about somebody that you're going to terminate just because they have 6 months of accrued vacation coming. Now we're going to pass this law, and I'm trying to figure a way around it to get out of that obligation. That's not what this is about.
Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Folks, I've represented a number of employers on this issue, and particularly those employers that actually didn't have a policy. They just had this accrued vacation, and then they're wondering, what do we have to do to change this? And my advice and what we've done in a number of situations is you have a bargain. You have an agreement, and the agreement says whatever. You get 4 weeks of paid vacation, and you get to accrue it. That's the bargain. To change that, folks, you got to have some consideration. You can't change that in the middle of the stream. You have to have some consideration to have a new agreement to change the written policy. And so my advice to those clients that I've had was, well, you're going to have to give them their vacation time and then institute a new policy, or you're going to have to pay them monetarily for whatever that was if you wish to change that policy. So I don't think that's a burden to an employer, but that was what they contracted for in the first place. All this is saying is that now if you have a written policy that says you don't get to accrue it, you don't get to take it with you when you're terminated, fine. And I've negotiated those, and we've changed a number of those along the way. The only concern that I may have about the language of this is whether or not the particular language invites an employer to change in midstream the benefit of the bargain. And I'm not sure on this if this language invites that kind of thing. But at the end of the day, we may be considering things that go bump in the night. But that's my only concern.
Senator Hastert.
Just for the last point, I guess having a problem understanding the unfunded portion of this. If this is a benefit that you had agreed to, you know, there's a, you know, as the vice president says, you can come up with scenarios. I mean, under this scenario with this bill, I mean, you can work, for example, you work 4 months and it's the employer's most busy time and he says, hey, please don't take your vacation. This is a busy time. And then at the fifth month, you say, hey, you know, I've got another opportunity. My wife is moving, so I've got to head to Colorado because, and he says, well, you know what? Sorry, but you don't get your vacation and you weren't allowed to take it before. So, I mean, there's, you're right, there, but this is it's a unintended consequence I'm afraid of. And what I don't understand is it won't affect those that have agreements, bargaining agreements or anything like that. And I know that. But, you know, we're talking about, and I applaud the good vice president. I'm sure he's a great employer. But there, unfortunately, is some that wouldn't be as upstanding on that. And so, you know, if I'm working, going to work all year, my employer knows that I'm going to take that vacation. So I don't understand the unfunded part of it.
Any further discussion on this bill? Questions being called for. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 79, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no.
No.
This bill is passed. The Committee of the Whole, okay. The division has been called. All those in favor, please rise. All those opposed, please rise. House Bill 79 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 111. 111. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 111, Tips and Gratuity Sales Tax, sponsored by Representative Petrov, an act relating to taxation. It was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Senators Case, Emmerich, Peterson, Von Flateren, Senator Peterson, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises reports that do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 111, Tips and Gratuities, Sales Tax. There are no standing committee amendments, and for further explanation on the bill, I would turn the time over to our good senator from Teton County.
Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, we struggle with some tough issues down here. We've just been working on one of those. But if I'll take you back to when you first started thinking about public service, and I think all of us, we may have verbalized it or we may just have hoped it, but we all wanted to lighten the load and lighten the taxes. And this little bill, this might be called the dream bill. That's Bill 111. You had a dream about reducing taxes, and this bill makes that dream a reality. Now I'd like to just share a little of the information with you. If you'll take a look, we'll go right to page 2. Up at the top of page 2, on line 2, you can see the one sentence that changes everything. And the new language, well, let me work on page 1, or on line 1. The sales price paid for meals and cover charges without the new language down at page 4, at any place where meals are regularly served to the public. We're talking about sales tax here. The new language says the sales tax paid for meals and cover charges, excluding all gratuities regardless of whether offered by the customer or invoiced by the seller. Now, what's happened out here is when you go to that restaurant and there's a group of you, quite often you'll see it right on the menu, and they'll tell you any group over, say, 8, 9, 10, they'll add an 18% gratuity, and it's spelled out that way generally. The trouble with that is the way our current law is interpreted by the Department of Revenue is that once it's on the bill, and if the restaurant bills it out, they look at it as taxable income. The challenge there is it isn't really taxable income, because while the restaurant may invoice it out that way and write it in as an 18% gratuity, they don't ever have access to that money. The money passes right through to the server who pays taxes on it. But the way we've interpreted the laws here at Department of Revenue, the employer also, or the restaurant also, has to pay that tax. Most of the states have already defined mandated gratuities, and there's something important to know here. While our state calls it a mandated gratuity, there's some wiggle room in there. A lot of your customers, when they see that word, they may choose to either raise the amount or they may scratch it out and lower the amount. And they have that option. So it's not really mandated. It's more of a suggested gratuity. And that's really where it ends up. The rub on this is that once the customer changes that amount, it becomes a little fuzzy. And do they then collect the tax? Don't they collect the tax? And it becomes an issue much like your typical receipt where you see you get to write the gratuity in. If you write it in, it's not taxed. But if you just go ahead and run your card for the amount that the restaurant puts on, it's taxed. They have to pay the tax, and then when the server gets their money, then they pay it again. Kind of wrapping this up for you now that we've cleared it all up. I just say that Bill 111 fixes a problem for business. They're required to pay a tax on phantom money. They don't get access to it. In fact, they're paying taxes on nothing. But they're still required to pay it. It's tough on free enterprise. It's tough on employers and businesses. It's a lose-lose. I'd like to take you back just a little bit farther. 239 years ago, it was a chilly night in December. The Boston Tea Party. This is the type of tax that resulted in a revolution. Vote aye to abolish taxation without justification.
Is there any further comments to that excellent history story? All right. Did someone call for the question? Questions being called for. All those in favor of Senator Peterson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with the favorable recommendation of House Bill 111, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say no. House Bill 111 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 112. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill number 112, Tip Distribution Policies. Sponsored by Representative Petrov, an act relating to labor and employment. It was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28. Senators Emmerich, Peterson, Von Flatren. No, Senator Kay. Senator Peterson, Chairman.
You heard the reading of the bill. Senator Peterson, what is your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation. On House Bill 112, there are no standing committee amendments, and for further discussion on the bill, I'd refer to the good senator from Devil's Tower.
Senator Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Pretty hard to follow up behind the good senator with a great story like that. I'm no Paul Harvey. He started on page 2, told you the rest of the story. I'm just going to give you a good, solid rundown on a great bill. This bill relates to tipping and how they're distributed. Currently in Wyoming, the way tipping works is you leave a tip on the table and you think you're leaving some money behind for that server. And That's the truth. But in truth, what you're really doing is paying for a whole team in most instances. You're paying for the maitre d' at the door. You're paying for the person that busses the table. You're paying for the bartender. They're all paid, but they don't get paid the same amount. They don't get a share in that good service. They get their wage, and they go home getting just paid for what they did. That's what tipping's about, is when you get great service, you tip for that service. And you want to tip everybody that paid a piece of that service. And the way it works right now, we've got an informal system going at a lot of our restaurants. And what they do is they share part of those tips between them, because they want the guy at the door, the girl at the door, to give top service, take you to the best table you can. And a lot of times you run into really interesting things. Somebody will say, I'll give you $10 if you give me the good senator from Teton County's table, because I know he's a good tipper. And so you got this informal system going on that we have a fairness system going, but they do it informally, and it leads to some really interesting things. So what this bill does is it allows employers basically accumulate 15% of the tips off of these people, off the top end of the people that's been informally done. And it allows them to put it into what's more commonly known as a tip pool, and to get that money under a formal type system back out that's fair to the employees. It's not a push around deal. So I'll go to the bill and talk about it a little more, but I want you to think about that. When you go to a great place and you get great service, is it the waitress that did the service, or the waiter that gave you that great service? Or was it a team that provided it to you? Was it everybody that was in the place? And did they all get compensated fairly for that great service? So what this really does, when you go through, and it kind of starts on top of page 2, and they start talking about the employees and how the tips are paid, and it says, provided this requirement shall not prevent an employer from setting and enforcing policies recording the pooling and distribution of tips and gratuities among staff directly serving customers. So this doesn't share with employees or employers' buddies or his friends or give it the favor one. It allows a system to be put in. It finds on line 7 that it is specific to food service establishment personnel directly serving customers. Wait staff, bus staff, service, bartenders, hosts, counter personnel serve customers. Going to line 12, tip and gratuity pooling and distribution policy shall not provide for the distribution of tips and gratuities to food service personnel, not directly. So they can't put it into the back room, and they can't take it away from people that aren't providing the service to you. Going to line 18, where the individual's primary server responsible for food or drinks, that individual shall not be required to contribute more than 15% of tips and gratuities. Individual. And going on to page 3, only tips and gratuities in excess federal minimum wage after county employer paid wages, tips and gratuities should be eligible. This says everybody's going to make more than the minimum wage. There's no way you can do it. You can't take and make someone make less, and you also make sure that they're all above. No one gets paid less. V is service industry, so provides support or recreational opportunities, some statutes, vacation resorts, guest ranches, travel tour guides, support. And these are parts that's really important. When you go to a guest ranch, once again, do you think it's the guy that takes you out on the horse that did everything that's there to go? People that saddled the horse, the people that provided you all the stuff. It really is. It's all about fairness among employees. And it's really hard in a lot of businesses. You know, some of the examples we heard is a lot of these waitresses, and this might shock you, you think this is a minimum wage issue. One of the restaurants I talked to talked about over a half dozen employees that made in excess of $60,000 a year working 30 hours a week. Gives you a hint of how much money we're talking about on quality service. These girls routinely push a lot of money back across to other people. The interesting part is they've got to pay. They got to report those tips. They got to pay them, and they pay taxes on them. And then they're gifting money back to their fellow employees, basically shoving them cash back under the table. This process brings it really in line with IRS guidelines. All the tips get reported. They get spread in a fair manner. It's not a favoritism game that somebody gets paid extra for doing something different. Bartender gets more tips from one person than another. or doesn't get paid as good. And, you know, it's not very fun to be that maitre d' at the front door if you're making $9 an hour knowing that someone else is making 45 an hour. It's only fair that they're allowed to put those into a pool and share them. And the employer generally is a guy that runs a team, and he's there to make so everybody can make the most money. And those well-run teams, we all know them. Those aren't the five and dimes. These are the good restaurants you go to that you enjoy, and you get to see how tips really work. So with that, I'd stand for questions.
Any further discussion on Bill? Senator Meyer.
Yeah. I see where there's a protection for the minimum wage in, over on page 3, but I don't see where there's any protection for the primary server if they're having a slow day that they don't get up to minimum wage. It looks like they still have to put their 15% in the kitty. And then I guess if it's a team, why is it the responsibility of the waitress to pay the employer's wages?
Senator Driscoll.
More questions. Mr. Chairman, those are great questions. The first one's simple. Federal law states everybody makes minimum wage. Doesn't matter what your base wage is. If it doesn't make it in the restaurant, slow day, the employer pays them all the minimum wage. That's law. There's no time. Doesn't matter if the minimum, and I don't know what it is exactly, but if it's 280 or 380, they don't make it, it's up to the employer to dig out of his pocket. It's a bad day for all, but it's a worse day for the employer. He's going to have to pay it all. On the sharing, on why should you? There's 40 some other states do this, and it's legal under federal law everywhere else basically to do it. And in order to really make it fair, it takes an employer to do it. Otherwise, you've created a competition system basically where you've got a side deal. And you also really penalize that person that you're talking about that wants to give something to somebody, but they can't legally side those tips over. And that does happen, but the IRS really doesn't like it. They're supposed to report every dime of those, and those are their tips, and they report them. And they got to take the withholding and the whole nine yards. That's tips are not, everybody thinks tips are a deal you fold up and put in your pocket. And that probably happens somewhere, but if you get caught doing it, you get to go to jail just like everyone else. That's against the law to do that. So these tips have to be reported by law. And when you pay that, that's just like you on your payroll saying you got a guy that's helping you out doing a lot of stuff, and we all do this once in a while. Say, well, geez, I'm going to pay all the taxes, do everything, and then I'm going to give you the money on it. There's a better system on that that makes it fair, and that's what this system is.
Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, sometimes I stand up and I'm just curious about the side of something I'm on and the position I'm going to argue, and this is one of those times. Mr. Chairman, what we have here is effectively a system for the redistribution of wealth that's given to employees. Communalizing revenues. That's what we're doing right here. We're taking money from a high-wage employee. We're actually taking the money back from them. There's effectively a contract between the person who shows up at the restaurant that's having a meal. They're giving a tip to an individual for that individual's performance. That's a reward for their performance. And we're going to, with this piece of legislation, sing a little song. We're going to, with this piece of legislation, allow the employer to take 15%, up to 15% of that wage, and redistribute that wage to their lower income employees. That's what this is. This is income and wealth redistribution. We need to be clear on that. Now, as far as the math behind this and the system behind this, when you have a tipped employee, that tipped employee has a base minimum wage of $2.13 per hour. Now, that is mandated by the feds, as the good senator indicated, up to $7.25 an hour. So that if you don't have sufficient tips to bring the employee up to that level, they will get that level. What this approach does is it allows the employer to take some of the wage that would be otherwise earned by the wait staff and use that to subsidize the tipped employees to bring them up to minimum wage without having to pay it themselves. In other words, I've got some tipped employees that aren't going to actually receive tips. I'm probably going to have to pay out of my pocket as the employer $7.25. But instead of doing that, I'll take 15% of the wages from those who actually are tipped and use that money not to increase the wages of the folks that are greeting me at the door or the folks that are cleaning up the table, but simply to bridge that gap between 213 and 725. I get to use those funds to pad those salaries and basically use up to $5 per hour of wage instead of having to pay it as the employee. I redistribute it from the wage earner, some sort of tax perhaps, I don't know exactly what you want to call it, and use it to pay the employees instead of the profit. That's what's effectively behind this. It's decreasing the amount of cash outlay by the employer and allowing the employer to redistribute, when right now the system we have in place allows the employees to do it already. They get to do that. Now, I recognize the fact that there might be some backwards dealings and some competition. I mean, that's what we just heard. It allows them to compete amongst each other. A healthy competition within a marketplace is what we have now. We're trying to move away from healthy competition in marketplace to a controlled market where the employer dictates the terms. Once again, it's not a free market approach. It's not trying to give rights to the employees. It's a situation, Mr. Chairman, where we're trying to make sure that there isn't competition amongst the employees and that the control goes to the employer to redistribute that wealth. Now, that's not necessarily as good of a sounding system when it's looked upon in that way. And it certainly isn't in the interest of the employees. It is in the interest of the employers. And I would also say that when we're looking at this, if we're trying to do this to solve the problem of kickbacks and shady deals, of this competition, the reality is they're going to do that anyway. Still, even with this in place, if you have somebody who's the best waiter in the restaurant, you might want to make an arrangement with that person as the host or hostess. Even with this in place, it's 15% of it, and you're going to try and set up those arrangements if you know what you're doing and you want to make an extra buck. So it's not solving that problem, but it certainly is taking us down the road towards communal wealth distribution, and I would encourage the body to vote against it.
Back to you, Senator. Well, let's see. Let's take Senator Anderson first, and then I'll take Senator Christensen next.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I expect the senator from Laramie to get a call from the White House to talk about taxing the most wealthy and redistributing the wealth. I think that's in the platform. I'm afraid he's going to get a call, and he'll change his mind tomorrow about that.
Woo, yes. Point, sir.
Yeah, can't do that. Oh, can't do that? Oh. Sorry, I didn't mean it. So in fairness, I talked to a waitress about this and said, what is the fairness of this deal? And she said, yep, that's right. We do 10 to 15% all the time, and I try to distribute it every night when I leave, and that goes on. The fairness that they would like to have is that is automatic, that she doesn't have to remember to catch that busboy or that busboy. So the waitress was in favor of that and liked that idea. This helps the compliance of the employee and the employer with those IRS regulations. It helps both of them to comply to that. Then the other point that came up in the committee was all restaurants don't do this. It's the high-end ones that the senator from Devil's Tower was talking about, where you go where you get exceptional service, and that's because a team is doing that, and that team is expected to participate in the revenues. So I apologize to the senator from Laramie about my comments, and I hope you pass the bill.
We feel your regret, Senator Christensen.
Chairman, on and for the bill, we've cast a lot of different lights on this, but this is really about a fair tax issue. You have one person paying the taxes for another one. This adds some order to it. It allows it to be recognized. It's a good bill. We didn't invent this. It's going on in the industry. It's going on around the nation. And it doesn't penalize those small operations where you still have one or two people doing the whole thing. But in today's industry, what you'll see is a lot more bigger operations. They work on higher numbers, and it takes a team to process that many customers. In the end, this is a win-win, both for the staff, for the operation, for the public, and it ensures a fair tax.
Further discussion. Senator Meyer.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure about a fair tax. If you talk about an automatic 15% contribution, that's just like a 15% check to the IRS. If you're making $25,000 or $30,000 as a server, and your employer says, okay, you know, you're required, it says, shall not be required to contribute more than 15%. Well, the employer can say, okay, Missy, 15% right now. And then the IRS comes in there and says, well, we want your other 15%. So now you got somebody making $30,000 paying 30% taxes, essentially, because the employer's taking 15% of her money, and the IRS is taking 15% of her money. And at the end of the day, she's getting taxed 15% by the employer, 15% by the government, and she might as well be making $65,000 or $70,000 an hour, because you or not an hour, a year. $65,000 or $70,000 a year. You just pumped her up into a 30% tax bracket. Now, you know, I don't see any fairness in that at all.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I've got a question. I'm neither on nor against. I'm just wondering. Under current statute, let's say there's a bar and grill, and the all the waitresses, bartenders, so forth, pool the tips from their shifts, from their shift. Can, under current law, can one employee suddenly say, hey, wait a minute, I'm a better server than they are, so therefore I don't want to pool my tips. Can the owner, under current statute, enforce that pooling authority, is my question.
Senator Driscoll, we assume you can
Mr.
answer
Chairman,
that.
I'll answer a few. I'll start with that one first. No, he cannot. Right now, he cannot step in and deal with those tips. Those tips are there. They're on the outside. That's what this bill is about, is for his ability to be able to deal with what happens to those tips. Let's talk about a couple other things. We keep throwing around this word tax a lot. This isn't a tax. These are tips, and these are property of the people, and they're sharing them amongst themselves for a reason. That waitress you're referring to that makes $30,000 a year, she might only make 10 if she didn't have a team working behind her, or he. The bartender you're talking about that we're trying to pay less than minimum wage to, or trying to cheat a little bit out of, he already can have that happen right now, because the bars, nearly every place I know of, you go to the restaurant that I think about in either Gillette or Casper, they've got a bar you can walk up to, and they're free to pay that bartender minimum wage, because the guys at the bar can throw tips out, and they can pay the minimum to him right now. What they're trying to do is get him for that service back. When he really gives that extra layer of service, you know, when you're sitting at a table and you wait an hour for a glass of wine and you don't leave a tip, well, the waitress really wants that bartender to get the right wine, get it right, have it the right temperature. It's a team effort, and it's about getting the most tips they can. And we all know what it's about. These guys talking, it kind of shocked me when we were talking. They talk about these parties of 10 and 12. They talk about tips of $200-$300, which kind of shocked me. I didn't realize that happened that often. It doesn't for me, by the way. We also talk about wealth redistribution. Wow, that's a great term. I won't personalize it. This is not wealth redistribution. You know, the stuff we hear about from Washington, D.C., it's mandatory from Washington, D.C. This is a business deal. And if you're in a business that you're going to go to work for, and they're talking about tip sharing and you don't like it, go on down the street to the hamburger joint and go to work for minimum wage, and you'll find out what low tips are. I'm guessing the people that do the tip sharing under this deal, which is voluntary, voluntary by the owner to participate in it. He doesn't have to. He can let it go on the way it is now. Let's see which one of them brings in the best waitresses, the best waiters, and the best maitre d's in town. And I'll make you a wager it's the guy that has the tip-sharing program, because it's the one that has the best-paid staff, top to bottom, not one at the top. This is about service. This is for you guys. This is so that when you show up, you don't wait an hour for your food. The table's clean. The silverware's polished. And the service is great. And it really is. It's truly voluntary. You don't have to. When you're going to work for somebody and you say, you know, the local business breaks an arm about once a week, don't think I'll work there. It's not about forcing anybody to do anything. It's about putting a system in place that works and gets you good service.
Is there any other big tippers that would like to talk about this? Okay. Senator Meyer, obviously.
Mr. Chairman, I want to just maybe take exception to the word voluntary. I look on page 2 lines 19 and 20, beginning after drinks, that individual shall not be required to contribute more. Well, if that language was that that individual may contribute not more than 15%, then that's fine. But somebody's requiring to that person to contribute. And I think that's the employer. And so that employer is requiring that person to contribute up to 15%. Now, that's not voluntary. That's a requirement. And the employer is asking that individual to requiring, not asking, requiring that individual to contribute. So this isn't voluntary.
Mr. Minority Floor Leader.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Just to follow up on that, a voluntary system would be what you have now, and you could even enter into a contract, a legal contract that could be drawn up between the employer and the employees that would be legally binding, that would structure an agreement. That can be done right now. The difference between now and what we would have if we passed this law is right now you have to have all of the parties in agreement. After we pass this law, you only need one party in agreement, and that's the employer. With regard to the wealth redistribution, I think this is wealth redistribution. If one person has wealth, and I take it and redistribute it, doing through this, and we're certainly doing it in a way that is a cost to the employee, to the benefit of the employer, and it's effectively an unfair system.
Call question. Oops, Senator Driscoll.
Last time, we'll go around it. There's a couple of deals just happened that aren't right. Wyoming employers cannot, even if it's all voluntary, they cannot make that contract happen. Right now, the employers cannot deal with tip sharing. It's outside of their realm. IRS rules are pretty good. I hope I'm not wrong on that. If I am, I'll come back down here and tell you so. But I believe that employers cannot do tip sharing now. Employees can do it behind the scenes. They can do it. Back to voluntary. This is voluntary. It's voluntary when you come to work. And I'm going to give you an example of our local business. We got a pretty big business in our town. And about 30% of the employees' wages, or plus minus, is based on a production bonus. That's this exact same thing. It says if you work as a team and we get things out the door, we'll pay you more money. And that's what this really does. This gives them a process to pay that more money because the tips do not come into the employer's hands. They do not put them in their pocket. They're a reward for good service. And right now, under the way the system is, if you go to pass this law and you go to a deal, yes, it is mandatory in that business, but you sure don't have to go to work for it. And that's, we all do that when we make choices when we work. And that's what I was talking about is, I think you'll find, if you pass this bill, that the best paid people, top to bottom, are going to be the businesses that participate in tip sharing because they're your upper-end places that want teams and they want all their people paid well. But the only way they can do that is to allow the employees to pool these tips or to help them pool them correctly. If they don't do it, your state costs another $8 because they got to charge you for it in order to get that. Thank you.
Okay, is a question being called. All those in favor of Senator Peterson's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 112, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no.
No.
This bill is cast, the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 116. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill number 116, Select Federal Natural Resource Management Committees, sponsored by Representative Lockhart, and Act Relating to Public Lands. It was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals Business Economic Development, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Senators Cole, Cooper, Hines, and Rothfuss, Senator Hines, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Dockstader, Hastert, and Meyer. No, Senator Perkins, Senator Bebout, Chairman.
You heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Hines?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it does so with a due pass recommendations on House Bill 116, Select Federal Natural Resource Management Committee. This is an act dealing with relating to public lands, and it would create the Select Natural Resource Management Committee. And what that committee would do would be review existing or proposed federal policies or action which may affect the management, development, or the use of our state natural resources. They would be able to develop and introduce legislation responsive to federal policy and action necessary to protect the interests of the state of Wyoming. This would be a committee that the President of the Senate shall appoint 3 members, and it would reflect the percentage of the majority and the minority party. There would be 1 member from the Agriculture Committee, 1 from the Appropriation, and 1 from the Mineral Business and Economic Development Committee. And the Speaker of the House would do the, follow the same policy. So they would be a 6-member committee, and that committee then would select among its members 1 senator and 1 House member to be co-chairmen. There was an appropriation of $16,000 to fund the Legislative Service Office to provide for salary, travel, and per diem of the members. Came about, as I understand it, because what the federal government does on our public lands have such an impact on Wyoming. And so to be able to keep up with that and look in and see if there's anything we can do to protect ourselves, you might say that we'd have this committee that would look at these things and see if there was something that needed to be done, or they could bring federal or legislation to this body that in effect would probably move on to the federal government and see if we could have a little better working relationship. It would be a committee that would continue after each general election. The president and the speaker would appoint members. Personally, it looks like to be something that we would combine our committees. I think each different committee works in different areas, but if we had one committee that kind of looked at all the actions and brought it forward, I think it would work a little smoother. Try to answer any questions. If there's none, I will ask for your support.
Any further discussion on the bill? Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, I think this is great, a 3-page bill. Certainly what it's going to do is grow government. But what concerns me, and that's exactly how you do it. Say we're going to have a committee that's going to go on forever and study stuff. When we got to study something, I'll give you an example. Leadership said we want to talk about fuel taxes. By the way, that hits 2 committees. So they tell 2 committees to get together and go solve the problem, and that's what we do. A select committee is different. First of all, as I read this bill, this select committee isn't actually a select committee. Select committees bring in outside people, outside experts, and select committees have the authority to write legislation. This committee doesn't. It's not expressly in the bill. They can write memos, and they can write suggestions, and they can write letters home, and they can write Valentine's Days, too. But they can't write legislation. This is how you grow bureaucracies. But what really disturbs me is what their mission is. I'm on the bottom of page 3. One big mission is they kind of elect a co-chairman. Then they're going to meet as necessary to review federal policies and actions which may impact management, development, or use of the state's natural resources. Well, if it's the state's natural resources, that means what the state owns. And folks, and I happen to own some mineral rights. I sure don't need a select committee helping me manage my mineral rights. So if they'll stick to the state's mineral rights, I'd suggest the state land office can take care of that. This is the kind of thing, it's like Topsy. It goes on forever and it accomplishes very little. The Senate has always been very hesitant We've had select committees. We've used them specifically. They were time definite, and they had the ability to do something. This committee has none of those redeeming qualities, plus it spends more money. Look at this bill closely. You know, if you want to live with it forever, keep it going.
Mr. Vice President.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would ask you to look very closely at this, because I think this is a very, very important step for us to do relative to our federal lands. And we all know that 52% of our surface is controlled by the feds, and probably 75 to 80% of our minerals are controlled by the feds. And I want to share with you some of the activities we got involved with during the last interim session with, by then, a subcommittee that was put together, and some of the things we did in Wyoming. The first thing we did about was we had a meeting in Rock Springs, and there's a situation over there that was going on with the Seatskedee Bird Refuge, and there was about 145,000 acres of land that had been set aside for agricultural purposes in the 60s. And it was set up to have an experimental farm set in to see if we can, in fact, take water out of Fontenelle and be able to use it to irrigate. Well, it didn't work, and because of a lot of reasons, they decided it wasn't a good use for that land. So what was going to happen is the fish and wildlife were going to, through a categorical exclusion, take that land and transfer it directly to the from the Bureau of Reclamation to the Fish and Wildlife for the Seatskedee Bird Refuge. It would have been a takings of 145,000 acres away from multiple use. You know, that's one of the first things that this committee set aside and did in Rock Springs. We had a meeting there. We had the Bureau of Reclamation there. We had the BLM there. We had a room full of concerned ranchers and multiple use advocates. And as a result of that meeting, that is not going to happen now. The Bureau of Reclamation has backed off from a categorical exclusion to transfer that 145,000 acres to the Fish and Wildlife. They're going to look at having the BLM manage that land as multiple use. That's just one example. Another example we had was a meeting we had in Douglas, where once again the room was full of, this time with primarily ranchers and again multiple use advocates, for the Thunder Basin grasslands issue, where now they are taking a situation with the prairie dog, the yellow-tailed prairie dog, I believe, that is an appetite for the black-footed ferret. So they're trying to make sure that we have a lot of those prairie dogs in the Thunder Basin grasslands, so if they introduce, not reintroduce, but introduce the black-footed ferret, which, by the way, is endangered, into that area, they have plenty to eat. Well, think about that, members of the Senate, what we're doing here. So we had the Fish and Wildlife out of Denver. We talked about this issue, and I think we made a lot of strides to being able to mitigate the impact between the ranchers and the concerns they had and what Fish and Wildlife was up to. And if you look at the pictures we were presented in that meeting, you can see where private sector ranchers are taking care of their property and the benefits of that for grazing. And then on the other side of that is what the federal government was doing with the Thunder Basin's grasslands. Terrible difference. And so there again, we're able to mitigate and try to do that. I think the benefits of this, and it is a select committee, and I would disagree with my colleague from KC on page 4. If you look at lines 4 through 6, it says, develop and introduce legislative responses to federal policies and actions necessary to protect the interests of the state of Wyoming. That allows them to, if in fact they want to come with a bill, that they can sure do that. I would hope that they would work with the other standing committees too as well. As to the language on the top of page 4, line 2, states natural resources, good catch. It was not intended to go after anybody's private minerals. It's about the state, and it's about the overreaching arm of the federal government in dealing with true multiple use and sustained yield of our federal lands. It's a very, very important issue. I think it's something we ought to give careful consideration to, and I would ask that you support this.
Senator Burns.
Chairman, for the sponsors of the bill, why exactly can't any of the standing committees in the legislature deal with this? And if it happens to be an area that is, say, a seam between committees, I know of no reason why the leadership or the management council couldn't assign or expand the area of responsibility of one of the standing committees. Travel, recreation, wildlife, and cultural resources did not start out with all those names. It was because different areas were expanded were taken into responsibility of that committee. And I don't know why a standing committee couldn't already do that. I don't know why we have to create a new committee.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, members of the body, let me walk you back a little bit to address the good senator from up in Sheridan County's concern. Is a couple of years ago, we come in here and we did a little bill called Special Expertise for the County Commissioners. And we just passed one out again this year, Special Expertise for Conservation District. These are locally elected governments. And to get as far as assigning this to a specific committee, let's talk about the commonalities here and what we're trying to really address. These are overarching federal rules and regulations that go across the board. And I'll use one that we're all familiar with, the National Environmental Policy Act. That was what the genesis of this is coming out of these county commissioners out there trying to address range, minerals, recreation, all these components, travel corridors, pipelines, livestock grazing permits that all dealt with one thing. It's called the NEPA process. We have other things called the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Coordination Act, the Clean Air Act that we've dealt with local governments at the state, up in Sublette County. So the genesis of this committee is really to try to roll in where these federal regulations come in. And again, I'm going to use specifically the National Environmental Policy Act. It has broad implications more than just agriculture, more than just minerals. It comes right back to the tax base of these local communities. We passed, I think, another bill out of here to do something with the road designations under RS-2477. That's not just a recreation and agricultural bill. That's a commerce bill for the whole state of Wyoming. So the function of this committee is to basically take, when you have these overarching federal nexus on every resource base, the tax base, and the people of the state of Wyoming, and focus those efforts there. Now, I would give you another example, one of the ones that came out of this issue that the good senator from Fremont County did. Through the hearings that we had up in Rock Springs and a subsequent hearing in Douglas, 3 or 4 months later, the Bureau of Reclamation is actually in the process of reverting back 30,000 acre feet out of the Green River back to the state of Wyoming. Because of this committee and bringing those people to the committee and talking about the process, that 30,000 acre feet isn't just for agriculture. It's available for any appropriator now, which could be a municipality. It could be an industrial user. It could be an agricultural user. It could go for a future minimum pool in Fontenelle Reservoir to be determined by the state. So this gets at the issue of these overarching federal rules and regulations that are across the board impact the people within the state of Wyoming. And I hope, Mr. Chairman, that answers some of the questions as to what the intent and how this committee would function and why it doesn't get assigned to another standing committee.
Senator Hines, do you have a comment? No? Okay. No further discussion, and we'll call for the question. All those in favor of Senator Hines' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 116, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no.
No.
The bill is passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Committee of the Whole rise to report.
You've heard his motion. All those in favor, say aye. And all those opposed say no. Well, it's about 3-2. Okay. Mr. President.
What about that introduction? Can I do that too? The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. House Bill 68, do pass amended. House Bill 52, do pass amended. House Bill 78, do pass. House Bill 79, do pass. House Bill 111, do pass. House Bill 112, do pass. And House Bill 116, do pass. Senator Cooper, Chairman.
Senator Cooper.
Mr. President, I move for the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's carried, and the report has been adopted. Where do you want to start? Messages from the House.
February the 11th, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 311, concurrence passed. Mr. President, the House did concur on Senate amendments to the bills listed below by the vote indicated. House Bill number 21, Peace Officer Immunity, ayes 57, excused 3. House Bill number 28, Disabled Hunter Programs, ayes 57, excused 3. House Bill 37, Hunting Licenses Raffle, ayes 57, excused 3. House Bill 53, State Land Violation, ayes 57, excused 3. And House Bill number 82, Interstate Sales of Health Insurance, ayes 46, noes 11, excused 3. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Introduction, reading, and reference of bills. House Bill 149, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 149, State Mythical Critter, sponsored by Representative Dan Zwanitzer, an act relating to the official mythical critter of Wyoming. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 48, noes 10, excused 2.
House Bill 149 is referred to Committee Number 12, Rules. Didn't want to bite the bullet myself. reports from standing committees.
February the 11th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 81, Engrossed Large Project Funding, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Dockstader, Hastert, Meyer, and Perkins, Senator Bebout, Chairman. February the 11th, 2013, Mr. President, Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 203, Engrossed, Health Benefit Exchange Study and Select Committee, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Dockstader, Hastert, and Perkins. No, Senator Meyer, Senator Bebout, Chairman. February the 11th, 2013, Mr. President, your Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 86, Engrossed Child Placement Orders, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Excabel, Hicks, and Schiffer. Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
Signing of Enrolled Acts. Enrolled Act number 11, House Enrolled Act 11, being original House Bill 2. The reading clerk will read it.
House Enrolled Act number 11, being original House Bill 2, an act relating to elections.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 11, being original House Bill number 2. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act 12, being original House Bill 3.
House Enrolled Act number 12, being original House Bill number 3. An act relating to the Uniform Commercial Code.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 12, being original House Bill 3. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act number 13, being original House Bill 9.
House Enrolled Act number 13, being original House Bill 9, an act relating to elections.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 13, being original House Bill 9. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act 14, being original House Bill 14.
House Enrolled Act number 14, being original House Bill 14, an act relating to crime victim compensation.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 14, being original House Bill 14. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act 15, being original House Bill 20.
House Enrolled Act number 15, being original House Bill 20, and act relating to child support.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 15, being original House Bill 20. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act 16, being original House Bill 23.
House Enrolled Act number 16, being original House Bill 23, and act relating to crimes and offenses.
I am about to sign House Enrolled Act 16, being original House Bill 23. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act 17, being original House Bill 29.
House Enrolled Act number 17, being original House Bill 29, an act relating to game and fish. Well, I guess you signed that one off the
front. I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 17, being original House Bill 29. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act 18, being original House Bill 40.
House Enrolled Act number 18, being original House Bill 40, an act relating to eminent domain.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 18, being original House Bill 40. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act 19, being original House Bill 49.
House Enrolled Act number 19, being original House Bill 49, an act relating to the legislature.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 19, being original House Bill 49. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act 20, being original House Bill 50.
House Enrolled Act number 20, being original House Bill 50, an act relating to the legislature.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 20, being original House Bill 50. I've so signed. House Enrolled Act 21, being original House Bill 57.
House Enrolled Act number 21, being original House Bill 57, an act relating to legislative compensation.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 21, being original House Bill 57. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act 22, being original House Bill 62.
House Enrolled Act number 22 being original House Bill 62, an act relating to environmental quality.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 22 being original House Bill 62. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act 23 being original House Bill 63.
House Enrolled Act number 23 being original House Bill 63, an act relating to public health and safety.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 23 being House Bill originally 63. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act 24 being original House Bill 80.
House Enrolled Act number 24 being original House Bill 80, an act relating to the military department.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act 24 being original House Bill 80. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act 25 being original House Bill 110.
House Enrolled Act number 25 being original House Bill 110, an act relating to gasoline tax distribution.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 25 being original House Bill 110. I have so signed. Concurrences. Senator Peterson, are you ready on message number 298 in reference to Senate File 30?
I am.
Reading clerk will read it.
February the 11th, 2013, from the House of Representatives. Message number 298, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 30, Special Districts. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 47, noes 11, excused 2. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendment. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Peterson.
Mr. President, I would move concurrence on message number 298. Senate file number 30, special districts, and ask the body to vote aye and concur. This, basically they didn't do much. They just put it off another couple of months to a year, implementing this requirement of filing reports, annual reports to the county commissions, buying a little time for the counties to ramp up, you might say, to prepare for this, scanning in these documents and reports, providing them on their county websites. We all agreed with that, and so if I'd ask your concurrence on this Senate file.
Discussion? The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 30, and you've been asked to vote aye. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, District 2?
Aye.
Anderson, District 28?
Aye.
Barnard? Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
No.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
No.
Amrick?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
Aye.
Johnson?
No.
Landon?
Aye.
Meyer? Nicholas?
Aye.
Nutting?
Aye.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Platern?
No.
President Ross?
No.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 21 ayes, 8 noes, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate File 30.
Senator Peterson, are you ready on message number 308 in reference to Senate File 68? Reading clerk will read it in.
February the 21st, 2013, from the House of Representatives, message number 308, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 68, sales tax zapping. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 56, noes 2, excused 2. House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendment. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move message number 38, concurrence on Senate file number 68, and ask the body to vote aye. Oh, Senators, this this bill is the sales tax zapping bill, and basically the House inserted on line 3, page 19. As you can see, they, after install, delete and insert or, and the delete or use didn't really have that much significance to the bill, and still in good standing, and I'd ask the body to vote aye on this concurrence.
Discussion? The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 68, and you've been asked to vote aye. Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Anderson, District 2?
Aye.
Anderson, District 28?
Aye.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Kraft, excused. Dockstader? Driscoll?
Aye.
Amrick?
Aye.
Esquibel? Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Nutting?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Flatern? President Ross.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 27 ayes, 2 noes, 1 excused.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate File 68. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate stand adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow, Tuesday, February 12th.
Announcement, Senator Geis.
Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Land, Water Resources, will meet tomorrow night upon adjournment, and S-15 will take up House Bill 126, Engrossed Agriculture Operations, House Bill 134, Engrossed Private Roads, House Bill 225, Engrossed Transfer of Ownership of Livestock and Brands. House Bill 228, Engrossed Transfer of Federal Lands and Study.
Further announcements. Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, will meet in 10 minutes up in S-13 to look at what the House did to the budget bill.
Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. President. Committee number 8, Transportation, Highway, and Military Affairs will meet in 10 minutes in S-14 to consider House Bill 161, Engrossed Outdoor Advertising Fees, House Bill 179, Failure to Observe Closed Roads, and House Bill 182, Engrossed Determination of Highway Right-of-Ways on Federal Lands.
Further announcements? Heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. Senate stand adjourned until 10 a.m. February 12th.